It's Jim. It's the World of Bonds. It's Friday the 19th of April 2024. This is for professional investors only and never ever investment advice. And this is the start of season 13 of Uncle Jim's World of Bonds. For those of you who follow cycle racing, and that's most of you, you'll know that if you're given the number 13 in a race, you have to pin it on upside down on your back to cancel out the bad luck. So that's what we'll be doing here on the podcast for the rest of this season. I did get to see some professional cycling over the Easter break. I took the family to Antwerp for the start of the Tour of Flanders, one of the five monuments of cycling. Turned out to be an easy canter for the world champion, Mathieu van der Poel. And last week, while the podcast was between seasons, I was also seeing clients in Taiwan, so a couple of trips over the past 3 weeks or so. My first trip to Taiwan, my first new country since before COVID. I do try to keep the number of countries I've visited in my life above the number of years in my life's age, but this was the first new one for several years. And I've got to say, it does throw up some tricky dilemmas when you're trying to keep count like this. Not least, you know, can I count Vatican City as a country that I've visited? What about somewhere like Hong Kong? Is that something you count separately or not? And does it depend whether you went when the British had it or when the Chinese had it? I don't know. And what about my interrailing trip to Yugoslavia when I was 19? Is that a separate country, or do I count Slovenia, which is where I was in Yugoslavia? And what about East and West Germany? Do I count that as two, or now is it just one? Do I have to take one away? So do I lose a country when it's reunified effectively? It's all very, very tricky. Anyway, in Taipei, in Taiwan, I went up Taipei 101, which was the tallest building in the world from 2004 to 2010. Now, there's a great economic theory called the skyscraper curse, which is actually a really old theory. Starting in the 1940s, someone called Edward Dewey suggested that the world's tallest buildings are completed pretty much at or after, just after the peak in a bubbly economy. So, you know, the examples he gave were the completion of the Chrysler Building, the Empire State Building, and 40 Wall Street, all around the same period of time, around the time of the Wall Street crash. But you can also bring the theory bang up to date if you looked at the Petronas Tower in Malaysia, whose finish coincided with the 1997 Asian financial crisis. Taipei 101, the example given, it was built during the dot-com bubble. And Burj Khalifa in Dubai, which I think is still the world's tallest building by a long shot, coincided with the global financial crisis. Of course, these things nowadays, and even back in the examples of Chrysler, Empire State Building, etc., take so long to build that you can probably fit the data and the dates to anything you like anywhere. But the theory is that tall buildings are signs of hubris, the kind of Ozymandias statue vanity. Look upon my works, ye mighty, in despair. We build them when it feels like the good times will never end, when money's cheap, when there's always going to be infinite demand for new fancy offices, etc. So that's the theory. It's a good one. Have a look at it. Right, on to the mighty and despairing bond markets. What happened over the Easter holidays? Well, there was yet another negative reassessment of the Fed's rate-cutting path, or you could put it more positively, the re-acceleration growth story really caught fire over the past month or so. So a lot of more optimism that the soft landing is not just going to be avoided, but we may get a re-acceleration. People pointing to the kind of the end of the 90s, talking of bubbles, as a kind of example of economics where you saw people pricing in a normal Fed rate cutting environment, but actually the US economy, thanks in part to the dot-com boom, took off again. heading into the end of that decade, and you got a reacceleration that caused a complete reassessment of what the Fed was going to do. And there's a bit of that going on at the moment, following a 0.4 monthly reading on the CPI print for March. So the year-on-year rate there now at 3.5%. That last mile we talked about in the last season, down to 2%. The last mile is seeming incredibly difficult to achieve. And if anything, inflation moving back in the wrong direction again. And it wasn't just the inflation data. You know, on the growth side of things, the jobs print came in over 300,000 non-farm payroll jobs created in March. That was against an expectation of 200,000, which itself wouldn't have been a terrible result growth-wise. So why is the US economy just so strong at the moment? And I think there are probably three possible explanations that all link up and are causing this. Firstly, Biden is running expansionary fiscal policy at the moment, even with real growth rates at the end of last year running up to 4% and more. Now they've come down a bit, but probably still 2.5% to 3% kind of range for real growth rates, which is probably above trend growth for the United States, and certainly is if you get to the higher end of that range. So, you know, running a 6% deficit at this stage of the economic cycle is going to be expansionary for the economy. Second is really, we mentioned kind of bubbly impacts at the end of the 1990s. Well, you know, look at the Magnificent Seven or the S&P, which is, you know, got Magnificent Seven in it and has been tilted by those names. The wealth effect is probably the second reason. Americans, probably in contrast to Brits and Europeans, they own a lot more stocks personally. The average household owns a lot more in equity than we do in the UK or the Europeans do. And so as the S&P has rallied dramatically, and you could also probably throw into here things like Bitcoin and meme stocks and stuff like that, this is going to make people feel and be a lot richer. And when they feel and are richer, they'll spend more and be optimistic about everything economically. So that wealth effect together with, you know, credit spread still pretty low, so financial conditions for companies will also be relatively easy, despite the fact that the underlying risk-free rate has gone up somewhat. And thirdly, immigration. A good paper from the Brookings Institute, a kind of mildly left-leaning think tank from Washington, talking about the big impact that the huge influx of immigrants across the Mexican border, in particular from Central America, that's boosting the US economy. You know, we know that the drivers of economic growth, GDP growth, are productivity growth and working age population growth. And if you've got millions of people potentially coming in, documented or undocumented, that's feeding through into the labour market and producing higher rates of GDP growth and employment and stuff like that. So the immigration is probably the third reason that people put down for the remarkably strong US growth. So the data releases that we've seen in April, mainly March data, mean that the bond market now is much more pessimistic than the Fed around the path of Fed funds. Looking at WIRP, the market only now prices in 1.6 rate cuts from the Fed. So that's 1.6 times 25 basis points now priced in. Even at the peak of bond market, general bond market bearishness back in October last year, before the rally started, the market was pricing in 2 cuts there. So, you know, we're even more pessimistic about the Fed than we were 6 months ago or more. In early January, remember, we'd priced in 7 Fed rate cuts. The dot plot that the Fed puts out says that we're going to get 3 cuts this year, but obviously June is now looking less than likely, although, you know, we've still got another couple of months of data to get through. And the optimists around bond markets would say when things slow, they slow very, very quickly, and they point to some signs of weakness within the jobs market in terms of number of openings and job adverts and things like that. So you have to be quite the pessimist to say that things are going to fall off a cliff, but, you know, it is a possibility, and it has happened in many economic cycles before. So where does that leave 10-year US Treasuries? We're up at 4.25% 10-year bond yields. At the start of the year, we're down at 3.5% 10-year bond yields. So we've seen a 75 basis point move higher in yields, and we're at 4.88 in October. So we're still below those levels that we saw, at the peak of the bond market bearishness back in October 2023. It's left the dollar as king. So DXY, the dollar trade weighted index, is at 106.1. That was at 103 at the start of 2023. So the dollar is up against everything. You know, the euro has been a particularly poor performer during April, but you know, so is the yen, and so is some of the emerging market currencies too. Risk assets still doing okay, but you know, a few signs that they might be running out of steam a little bit. So looking at the high yield market, so looking at CDX high yield, the credit default swap index for the big US high yield dollar names, that's now trading at 371, and last month it was down at 311. So we have seen a 60 basis point widening in high yield spreads in the last couple of weeks. I've run out of time now. Lots more to talk about. Next week, for instance, Ben Bernanke came out with his report on the Bank of England, fairly damning on things like IT systems and how senior economists are used in making the forecasts. But maybe we'll talk about that a bit next week. Have good weekends. Bye.